Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Plan for Fitness Talk Show. I'm your host, Deborah Vidala, broadcasting live from Palm Beach County, Florida. It's Sunday, June 14th, 2015. Tonight's guest is someone who is a leader, compassionate, dedicated, and skilled in many areas of expertise. Brent Bronworth is committed to the community by many years serving the Palm Beach County area. Battalion Chief of Emergency and Medical Services at the West Palm Beach Fire Department, EMS Lieutenant Operations Captain, SWAT Medic, Police Officer, Hazmat Tech Fire Instructor, Continuing Ed Instructor and Coordinator. Currently, Brent is the Director for the Fire Science Department at the Health Career Institute. And I want to bring Brent on the line because I see he's calling in from Lake Worth, Florida. Welcome to Plan for Fitness Talk Show.
Hi, how are you, Deborah?
Good, Brent. Thank you so much for coming on the air with me tonight.
I'm very excited to be here. I'm very excited to be part of the message that we're going to talk about today. It's my pleasure.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the topic of discussion is public awareness. Brent is currently, it's so great to have you with me, and this topic, I'm already getting questions and tweets on Twitter. I reached out and asked you to be my guest, first and foremost, because I am proud to know you and grateful for all the hard work you have given and continue to do. I'm driven to do talk radio. Thank you. I'm driven to do talk radio because it's an opportunity to share a message and information. My meeting with you, Brent, was informative as I continue to grow and learn and communicate views on health and wellness. Our first point of interest when we met today and I related with you is what you said to me was, it's important to love what you do. Let's talk about that.
I believe that when you're a young person starting out, deciding what you want to do for the rest of your life as a career, if you will, that you should just cast away ideas of, you know, financial gain or monetary or material things. Your goal as a young person when you're choosing a career should be, I want to do something that I care about, that I love. It's like I tell my kids, if you're going to do something for 30 years, you better like doing what you're doing. And I loved what I did. I still enjoy it. I'm still trying to be a part of it. And, I mean, there is no more admirable a job than
Great.
To say,
is very
I'll
proud
save
of
your
you
life.
And the children.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yes, definitely. But there's no more. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Brent.
I was just saying there's no more admirable job in my eyes to say, I'll help you or I'll save your life. And then to say, I'll risk my life to save your life, that's even, I think, the most admirable.
Absolutely. I mean, listen, you've been doing a lot in the community in many different facets, you know, from being the medics and really in charge of a lot of important things. I have a list of qualifications that you have and the training that also goes along with each certification. And I want to talk about some of that, but I really admire you, again, because you are driven. You are successful, but yet you are humble. So I admire your energy to remain teachable.
Most definitely. I mean, education is the key, obviously. If you're not learning, you're not growing. And that's the key thing for when you're selecting a career. I mean, obviously, you want to do well, so you want to get a good education in your career. And it certainly is. It's very difficult nowadays to become a firefighter, paramedic. I mean, it's very well sought after job. It has been for some time, probably since 9/11. And the education in and of itself, you go to EMT school, which is anywhere from 4 to 6 months probably, and then you can go to paramedic school after that, or fire school, one or the other. But paramedic school is a solid year and change. And then fire school is another, 3 to 4 months. And it's very, I always described it as kind of part blue collar and part white collar. The blue collar was the firefighter, they're getting your hands dirty and this kind of thing, whereas the white collar was the paramedic end, where you were part, part ER physician, part anesthesiologist, part nurse, part phlebotomist, kind of this bastardized, excuse me, if you will, medical professional who's a little bit of everything and is there to keep you alive or to save your life and get you to the hospital so the rest of the teams, the ERs, the ICU, et cetera, so the surgeons can put you back together to make you well again.
It's very admirable. I mean, obviously you've won quite a few awards and you retired in August of 2013. At 52, you went in, that's approximately 30 years, and you're still giving back to the community, but you continue to excel in many fields of expertise. The city of West Palm Beach, I'm sure, was felt lucky to have you, and I myself, living in the county, in the community, extremely, extremely proud of your accomplishments, as your family is. I have people up in Connecticut sending their love to you tonight. So I have a question coming in regarding your training for your – you did SWAT, the SWAT team and the police department for West Palm Beach. Can you tell the listeners part of your training for that?
Definitely. It's funny because nowadays I was the first certified SWAT paramedic / officer in Palm Beach County, there was two of us, but I was one of the two in Palm Beach County. And that started, 1990. And then others followed suit. There was only 600 of us in the nation that were nationally certified in it. And basically what the first thing you had to do was try out for the SWAT team, which was two horrible, horrible physical and mind-altering days almost that you had to last those days. And at the very end, you got tested on running and rappelling and all sorts of things that you were trained on the whole time. And it was like a mini boot camp, if you will. And if you made that, you did an oral interview, and then you got selected by the police department. And then they put you through the police academy, and then you went through SWAT schools after that. And one of your SWAT schools was a SWAT medic, a national SWAT medic symposium, which you had to be selected for and picked for. And I was lucky enough to be selected for that, and actually was was picked as the president of the class. I guess that's it was all militarized. So anytime it's anything
that's
militarized,
awesome.
Anytime they give you a title, you're like, okay, what do I have to do extra? But it was a
Absolutely.
Great honor to do that. And then you qualify
sure.
with all your firearms with the police department, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah,
well, anybody that knows you can see that, you love what you do, what the commitment that you've put in. Were you in dangerous situations when you were doing the police and SWAT position?
Most definitely. I mean, anytime they call out the SWAT team, it's for when guns or violence is involved. I mean, really, that has to do with your CIs, your confidential informants that go in there, and they do a drug buy and get with the police, and then they'll tell them what their intelligence and say, oh, they got guns here or we got guns there, and And trust me, there's times we were going in where, you know, we were told they had grenade launchers or just, you know, craziness. And, you know, and obviously you're called to just your regular search warrants like that, but you're also called to any barricaded suspect. And when you say barricaded, that means they have a firearm. Any violent type person who is out there and you know, is threatening people or threatening the community, you guys are called in, and you use your stealth and your fitness. Talking about a fitness show here, your fitness there, and that was you had to be extremely fit to be on SWAT. You had to be fit on the fire department, but a lot of times that, like I think we spoke of before, it kind of made some unhealthy people out of that because of the, you know, because of the calls and whatnot. But on SWAT, you had to be in perfect fitness. And I mean, and you would run so that you could sit. It's funny because you would do all this running and do all this physical fitness so that you could sit and stay still for hours on end. Because a lot of times that's all you're doing, and you're waiting. And then it's all of a sudden the plan is in effect, and we're going in, we're going to throw some tear gas in and go get this guy out of here. And, I mean, I can't tell you how many situations I had that were extremely dangerous where, you know, we go in there and, I mean, these people have shot people. You know, they shot, we had a call on Bunker Road, I can't say, go to law office where a gentleman was unhappy with his legal advice and went in and started blasting away, and he was there to kill his lawyer. And he had a shotgun, all sorts of things, and basically we went in there to take his life and to save any other hostages in there. And right before we did that, we ended up, he took his own life. And, you know, as sad as that is, he didn't hurt anybody else. And we were there, and that happened more than not. But there's plenty of people that we saved. And as a medic, I was mainly there for the police officer and the citizens, but I was also there for the bad guys. And there's times I've worked on not only police officers, but the bad guys as well, and put some IVs in them and kept them alive and got them to the hospital.
Wow. I mean, that's really intense. And we did talk about this earlier, ladies and gentlemen. I have on the line calling in from Lake Worth, Florida, Brent Braunworth. He wears many hats. He's fire rescue. He's done SWAT police. He's just... You're amazing. I mean, the notes that I took when I did the interview with you today, I just feel so grateful to have you on the air to share with the listeners all you've done, approximately 30 years and still counting. And so that was a great response to the question. I'm getting a thank you via Twitter for your response. And also that's intense training for SWAT police. But also first response, the life-saving, you know, versus, you know, you're seeing a loss as well. And my thought was, you know, this is physically demanding, but also emotionally demanding. What is your view on that, Brent?
Yeah, it certainly is physically demanding. You got to kind of be in pretty good shape to work for the fire department, but you also have to be really mentally stable to get in there. And that's obviously, that's why they do psych tests before you get on there, but mentally stable to kind of deal with a lot of things. I mean, you see a lot of death, you see a lot of pain and agony and all that, regardless of everybody, you know, with all the testosterone out there. And trust me, there's both men and women work for the fire department, but a lot of times it's a testosterone driven occupation, if you will. And everybody wants to say they're tougher than nails and, oh, it doesn't bother me. But I'll be the first one to tell you. I mean, I was one who said the same thing. But you know what? It bothered me a lot of times. And, you know, you see a lot of things that maybe you shouldn't see as a young person, as a young man. And you deal with it within yourself. And I've talked to people. I've gotten help at times. And it's a reality that you deal with, but it's like anything else. I mean, everybody kind of sloughs off the psyche, but it's as important as treating a chest pain or treating a, you know,
absolutely,
a hypertension. And it's
absolutely
important everybody
it's
look at that.
It's part of wellness. Yeah. Nice
Most
that
definitely.
You identified. if you needed to go and get any extra care for yourself. That's part of taking care of you. And that's why you've been so helpful to save lives and be, you know, just, I mean, you're definitely still in a leadership position doing what you're doing. I want to talk about, because you really touched my heart today when you talked to me about this lady. You responded to a call after a near-death accident, and this lady had called you sometime after her recovery, and you know, she was doing remarkably well. Do you want to share the listeners with that experience?
Most definitely, yeah. That was a it was certainly a heartfelt thing, and I was certainly grateful to get the call, because that is always nice. I mean, a lot of times we go to these patients and we, you know, maybe we even save them and we think, you know, but we don't know if they really live and walk out of the hospital. And we had this one young lady, she was back in the Stone Age when some people still used pay phones. This young lady was making a phone call at a gas station, dropped her quarter and went over to pick it up. Meanwhile, at the exact same time, there was a woman in a car by next to the garage at the gas station who was arguing with her boyfriend, put her car in reverse, and drove very quickly, unfortunately, over that woman who had just bent over, whom she couldn't see. And I got there, and she wasn't breathing. And so we started breathing for her with a bag valve mass ventilator, and we're going to put an advanced airway in her. And, we got her on a backboard, and she was just, I mean, she had a tire track across her chest. I mean, she was so damaged, she had one of her eyelids was torn. I mean, that's incredible. Anyway, so we did what we had to do, put some IVs in her, eventually secured the airway, took her up to St. Mary's, which is the trauma center in the city of West Palm, and they did a phenomenal job like they always do. And a month later, this woman called me up and said, oh, St. Mary's told me to call you and thank you personally. And I was like, you know, and she kind of gave me a little background. I go, man, you got to be more specific. And then she started saying some things that I recognized. And I said, oh, I, you know, and I couldn't believe she actually lived, to be honest. I mean, I wouldn't have thought of that. That would have been the case, but she did. And she really had no issues after that. And it just shows you the remarkable, when everybody works as a team in the medical field, starting with the CNAs or the LPNs or the, you know, going to the nurses, to the paramedics, to the doctors, to the surgeons. It's a really an incredible thing that we have trauma centers in this county and throughout Florida. It's, you know,
absolutely.
It's really, when everybody works together, it's incredible.
I think that what you described just now with the lady calling you is a gift. It's really, really and truly a gift. And that's a wonderful thing to share with everybody. And I'm sure you have many stories, and we talked about that today. You have a book. You're also an author. Do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about your book?
Yeah, my book is it's called Blood, Guts, and Tears. It's True Stories of Courage. It's published by Seashore Publishing, and you can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, just about any bookstore. It's been out for quite some time. The other book I wrote was a textbook called Street Scenarios for the EMT and Paramedic, and that was put out by Simon & Schuster, and that's been floating around for a little bit longer than that, probably 20 years. But it's I've been very blessed with that respect. God gave me a gift, and I was very happy to use it. And writing was similar to the medical stuff. I had to do it. I didn't have a choice. You know what I mean? Writing was something that I said I wanted to tell stories, and I was in the line of work where people wanted to hear about them anyway. So that was great for me. But I've written a bunch of stories that have been published. That's why I put the book together, Blood, Guts, and Tears. Most of those stories have been published previously in the Palm Beach Post, in the Sun Sentinel, Reader's Digest, Tropic Magazine, used to be in the Miami Herald, Emergency Magazine. And then I compiled all those stories together, and I had almost enough stories for a book, and I submitted it. And one of the publishers came back and said, if you write about, 40 more pages, we'll print this and we'll publish it. And I said, oh, wow, that's awesome. It was like a dream come true. And it's had some acclaim, There's some great stories in there. A lot of them are depressing because a lot of times it's looking at the calls that I was bothered by. I had trouble with, if you will, and that's why I wrote
that affected
about it.
You. Yeah, that affected you personally.
No, definitely. And
yeah.
It's one of those things where once you write them down, all of a sudden it's not bothering you so much because it's more like a story now. So it's good. It's good
mm-hmm.
therapy, if you will. So, but
I've been reading through the book, and I know I had read it some time ago, and thank you for this copy. I also want to talk about a month ago, you suffered a heart attack, and we
yes.
talked about it today. Of course, I was concerned, and my family shared me with the information to me, and I said, well, let me talk to Brent about this, and you were home with Mary, and you obviously
yes.
you understand what the symptoms are, and she drove you to the hospital.
Yes, she did. As a matter of fact, I had and again, I look young, I feel young, but it just shows you never know, and you need to get your physicals done, and you need to follow up with your doctor and be comfortable with your doctor and tell them everything, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, you grow up as a firefighter, paramedic, you're in that field and a SWAT guy, and you're in charge of everything and blah, 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 and you feel invincible. And I had chest pain that one day, not really doing any. I was actually coughing. And I got some chest pain, and it was like an elephant on my chest. I mean, I'm no kidding on that. And I was sweating profusely, which in the medical field, as you know, is known as diaphoresis. But I was still in denial,
yeah.
and I was still like, well, I was coughing. I must have hurt my sternum. And I was still in denial, but I was concerned. So one of the first things I did was take Advil, which is a bronchiolytic. It's like taking an aspirin, but aspirin's better. But I did that just to be on the safe side. And then I had my wife, who's really been great support in all this, and she's awesome, drive me up to the hospital. And once I got to the ER, I stormed in there like I owned the place because I was concerned, obviously.
Yeah.
And, you know, I gave everybody hell, and they finally get in the back room, and they told me the bad news. And once again, just showing you how great the medical facilities are around here. Once they identified it, they shipped me over to the cath lab. They transferred me from Bethesda West to Bethesda East, and they shipped me off to the cath lab. And within, you know, it seemed like me about 20 minutes, I was pain free and ready to go home. And it was truly
nice.
Amazing. But I do attribute
Go ahead, Brent.
Oh, I'm sorry. I do attribute a lot of my recovery because I did work out a lot before. I had some bad habits as well, which, you know, sometimes
mm-hmm.
that's a lifestyle thing, and I had to make some lifestyle changes. But I think I had a quicker recovery than most because I did try to keep myself fit. I was in the gym 5-6 days a week.
And that's a good point. You know, you were maintaining. I call it maintenance when you go to the gym. You know, and you just continually do that throughout your life. It's part of a lifestyle, no matter what your other habits may or may not be. But with the heart attack, you know, we talked about heredity, which it runs in my family, and the Italians, they have all kinds of heart trouble, and so I have to be concerned about that. But also, you know, I spoke to you and I said, you know, I'm obviously an on-call first response caregiver for a gentleman for 10 years now. And I says, oh, my God, Brent, you know, you're on high alert all the time, and the stress and the demands of the many jobs that you've done over the years. You did have two stints put in, and you were at 95% blockage.
Yes, I was. It was 95% blocked, which, again, you know, I think much of that is hereditary, but it doesn't help with all the stress and some of the bad
mm-hmm.
life things we have in our lives, things we do. But you're truly right. I mean, that's why, you know, with the fire department, you know, one of the things I tried to do there, being on the pension board and a union person, was try to get these guys out early so they could enjoy their retirement. Because classically, firefighters seem to retire within 10 years, they were on the ground, they were buried somewhere. And that's really that's a known fact. Police and fire don't do well. And it has to do,
mm-hmm.
it probably has to do with all that stress involved. And it's, it's not good for the body, and it really isn't. I mean, I was telling you today about the tones where, you know, they over time they soften the tones. You know, when you get alarm, it comes across the speakers, and you get the tones, beep, beep, beep. But, you know, for the first 10 years of where I worked, I mean, there was just these screaming out-of-the-blue tones, you know, and you'd jump through your day, and you'd be asleep, and you'd be, oh, my Lord, you know. So, but it's, yeah, so, I mean, they've tried to make improvements over the time, you know. I mean, like anything else, they, you know, just at West Palm and being in administration there, ultimately, you know, you try to make improvements for the guys and make everything healthier for the guys, and so the guys did live longer and stuff. And but it just goes to show you, even there's nobody who's invincible. Even the big lifesaver guy comes in and does whatever he can for you, or the big SWAT guy, and everybody needs to take care of their health and go see doctors on a regular basis and follow up with the doctors. I was as bad as anybody because, again, I knew it all and excuse me, I knew it all, and I was invincible, and all of a sudden, one day, I'm grabbing my chest like anybody else and going, uh-oh, this could be the big one. And, I mean, I couldn't believe it at the time, even after the time. I was still in denial, but, you know, you come to realization eventually.
Absolutely. I think it's good that you share the story. Everything that you share tonight is extremely inspiring. You're already doing cardio because we talked about cardiac rehab now, and you're already doing it, basically. And you can speak to the surgeon this week, and so please keep me posted. But the main thing that I saw today was you have a positive outlook and a grateful heart, and that's what's even more inspiring about you.
I hope so. I mean, I think I told you today that I like going to work. I like working around, you know, schools. I always like that energy there. And you know, when you go to work, and trust me, I don't really have to go to work if I didn't want to. But I like to do it. I like the routine. I still have a daughter in college, and, you know, my son is doing great. He followed my footsteps in the fire department. I'm very proud of him. My daughter's going to be a nurse. So it's all kind of coming together. But, one of the things I'm positive for is I have a very strong family life. My family's been very important to me. They support me. And like I said, you know, I had this problem and everybody was there for me, you know, and that's really a big deal. If you have family, it kind of starts, I think, with God being in your life and having that strong back up there. And then when you have family, it just makes you that much stronger as well. And then you have friends, then you have your friends network and all that stuff makes you stronger. I always looked at going to work was, everybody goes to, let's face it, work is work. Whether you love it or not, there's some days you go, hey, you know, I could do without this. I could be retired. But you know, if you go in with a positive attitude, it's a lot better than going in with a negative attitude. Nobody wants to work with somebody who's complaining all the time and nothing's ever right and et cetera, et cetera. The key thing is, you know, if you got to be there anyway, you might as well have a good attitude. And that's the key thing. I mean, I'd rather be in a good mood than a bad mood. I'd rather have a good time than a bad time. And I'd rather have fun, even on calls. Or you go have fun because, hey, you're there. I know it's work, and you're gonna do the best you can. But have fun while you do it. You know, have a positive attitude. You know, it makes everybody. If you have a positive attitude, everybody has a positive attitude when you're around. It's
a chain reaction, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah,
we're down to our last minute, Brent. I want to thank you so much for being with me. Tonight, we definitely want to send a shout out to your family. So proud of the example you and Mary have given to the children, and the best of luck with everything. And I will be having you back on the talk show.
Well, I thank you very much. And again, I'm just a representative of my fellow brothers and sisters out there who do it every night. When
yes.
I'm home sleeping in bed, they're out there saving lives. So I take my hats off to them, and I thank you so much. It's great to have a forum where you're able to talk openly about your careers and fitness and health and spirituality, if you will.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, we thank you so much for tuning in to Plan for Fitness Talk Show tonight. I'll see you next Sunday at 6:30 p.m. streaming live. Good night.